Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, and back with us this week is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. She's a Democrat from Buffalo, the 141st Assembly District. I really enjoy talking with her. She has a lot to say about a lot of issues. Welcome back, Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
Well, it is, of course, budget crunch time. We're a couple of weeks late now. What can you tell us about where we are? I've seen some articles suggesting it's almost done. We're sort of in a framework of a deal, and it could be done by this week, maybe voting on it into next week. Where does it stand in your mind now?
Well, it looks like we're closer than we were when we started, much closer. Not thinking that there'll be anything that'll necessarily be voted on this week, but I do anticipate that the budget should be complete by next week.
And what about Governor Hochul, of course, a fellow Democrat, the governor who has said, you know, it doesn't really matter whether the budget is on time or not if I don't get my agenda items in the budget. What do you think about those comments?
Well, I think my friend is starting from a good purpose, but I'm not so sure that is necessarily the correct way to go. I think a budget document should be filled with a lot of numbers as opposed to a ton of policy. And so, you know, when you start out from a policy perspective, then you've got to get over 100 or so people agreeing with you on that policy. And to assume that that would happen just because you put it in the budget is not a fair assumption. And so this is where we are.
Yeah, one of the items that's been holding up the budget has been the issue of discovery, the amount of evidence that has to be provided in a criminal case. And the governor seems to want to change those rules. Where are you on this whole issue of discovery?
Well, I'm not in total disagreement with the original discovery bill that was passed, but I do know that, you know, in a government where compromise is required, on a regular basis, that you perhaps sometimes need to revisit things. And so I think the revisiting that we've been through as a legislature under the leadership of the speaker and an amazing staff, I think, you know, we've come to a place where the governor can agree that she's gotten what she wanted to see and that we are still in a position where we protect the people who really need, you know, social justice.
Yeah. And one of the things that the governor has talked about is affordability for New Yorkers, and the idea of giving people $500 inflation refunds, basically. Is that something that New York State can do at a time when now we have so much uncertainty coming down from the federal government?
Well, from my perspective, I actually agree with you that we do not know what's coming from the federal government. And for that reason, we might need to hold whatever surplus we have in order to deal with that. However, you know, the governor is entitled to her opinion. I'm not confident necessarily that, you know, it's the best decision, but sometimes you have to, you know, go with the flow. I know that many of the people who I represent would love to see a $500 check. In fact, it would help their families a lot deal with the many issues that they are dealing with now. You know, rent, you know, children in school, things that they may need, utilities and all that sort of thing. So I get it that people do need those resources. But if we are hit with a major impact from the federal government, we're going to need to try and make up some of that somewhere. And so I think it puts us in a position where we'll have to think longer and harder about how we continue to deliver services to the people of our state should the federal government choose not to do so.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that will mean, because it seems to me it's quite obvious, I've been asking folks I've been talking to on the Capitol Connection weekly about this, and this includes now you, New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Are we going to end up in a special session? It seems like, because of the uncertainty, that's where we're going to end up. We may have to revise plans. We may have to pull from the rainy day fund.
We'll have to do what we have to do, David. I'm hoping that in spite of how where the federal government is leaning now, I'm hopeful that perhaps, you know, they will see the light and stop doing things that are destructive to the lives of the people, not just New York State, but to the people of America.
I noticed some of your colleagues have introduced a bill. It's called the Reciprocal Enforcement of Claims on Unpaid or Reduced State Entitlements or Recourse Act, and is one of two bills that were introduced in March by State Senator Jessica Ramos and Assemblymember Michael Asher that are meant to provide the state with some leverage against the Trump administration's hostile attitude toward New York State. Any idea whether that's got any legs?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure why a gentleman like Trump, who has, you know, risen to the role of president of the United States for the second time with 32 felonies, would be so interested in being negative towards the state, the home state from which he is from. I hope that, again, that at some point he'll, you know, change his mind about why he needs to be vengeful and why he needs to, you know, hurt people by trying to hurt a certain individual. I don't think it's the smartest thing to do for a president or anyone else. I believe in karma. I think what you put out, you will end up getting back. And, you know, I think he can vote much better for himself and our country if he would start to treat people fairly.
Well, and one of the New Yorkers that's in his administration now is Lee Zeldin, former Republican candidate for governor. Didn't do so badly in that gubernatorial election. However, he's now the head of the EPA. He's the EPA administrator. You know, it's the Environmental Protection Agency tasked with protecting the environment, and he's removing environmental protection rules. And now they're coming after New York State and their environmental legislation. You know, you have the New York Superfund Act. And of course, this session, you guys are looking at the New York Heat Act, which your colleague in the Senate, Liz Krueger, wants to pass. And yet there's pushback on that, saying it'll raise energy costs, while others are saying it'll help New York's energy issues.
Well, I mean, you really have to think this one through in many ways. I'm not sure why Lee Zeldin doesn't realize the impacts that major climate events have had on not just people's lives in the state of New York, but quite frankly, the economy. The state of New York has had to put out multiple millions of dollars in order to deal with the results of storms and floods, et cetera, et cetera. It's not inexpensive to put infrastructure back in place that has been destroyed by the climate. So if you understand that climate change really impacts us as taxpayers and it impacts the lives of people, why would you want to stop opportunities to begin protecting us against those things? I'm not really sure what that mindset means, but I do know that, as it relates to the HEAT Act, if you force companies to spend multiple millions of dollars, for instance, in Buffalo, putting, you know, utility supplies underground, it's going to cost a lot of money. And I don't know that that's something that government can or should fund. But I do know that if businesses have that sort of increase in their final costs, they are going to push that on to the consumer. And so I would anticipate that we should look forward to increases in the cost of utility.
It is interesting, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, Assembly Majority Leader, that when you looked at the latest Siena poll, it shows that New Yorkers really do think that the environmental legislation New York wants to pass will help New York when it comes to the climate crisis. But at the same time, they don't want to pay more money for energy. So both issues exist in New Yorkers' brains.
They do. And, you know, it's the reason why, you know, we operate in a deliberative process. So, I mean, perhaps we need a little bit more deliberation and communication with everybody that's impacted, not just the individual people, but the businesses as well. Because at the end of the day, we do need to get to a point when we figure out how to protect our environment. But we have to have everybody engaged. And I don't think you can, you know, just mandate it on them. You have to get them engaged in the process of coming up with what that solution is. And I think we're close. And by the way, I like some of the changes that were made in my good friend Liz Krueger's bill and the new sponsor in the assembly, Joanne Simon, but I'm not confident that, you know, it's not going to increase the cost for the people that I represent in the city of Buffalo.
You know, just anecdotally, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, what are you hearing from your constituents with what's happening on the federal level as it impacts New York? You know, we're hearing about these tariffs affecting farmers to local businesses because of these threatened tariffs. We've also seen the markets hit hard, obviously, and people worried about things like 401ks. But what are you hearing from your constituents?
Well, I do hear from constituents that they're not necessarily happy with the fact that the price of everything is going up because of the tariffs. I've heard from restaurant owners who literally have to raise the price. I've heard from people who traditionally are able to sell their products, particularly I'm speaking now of liquor products that they used to be able to sell in Canada that they can't sell there no longer because they took it all off their shelves. And so it definitely is having a negative impact on my constituency. In fact, today, in the city of Buffalo, there's some 200 people who are trying to understand the changes that the federal government is trying to make on Social Security. We have the Center for Elder Law and Justice supporting us with all of the details. And there's literally some 200 people trying to understand how they can protect their Social Security from the federal government. That's real. People feel it. And so the best thing we can do is give them whatever information they need to figure out how to protect themselves as we go through this Trump administration.
Is your mind blown in any way, Crystal Peoples-Stokes, that Republicans and Democrats have always, at least in the past, agreed that Social Security was sacrosanct, that you didn't mess with it, that so many older Americans who vote in mass numbers want your hands off it, and yet they're messing with it, it seems like?
Well, it's because, quite frankly, some of New York voters and American voters did not understand that, you know, this man was going to do what he said he was going to do. And honestly, I've been paying into Social Security since I was 14 years old. And I don't think that anybody should be touching the money that I put away for my life in the future, no matter what they think the reasons why it is. People pay into Social Security. It's not all government funds. These are people's dollars that they put in. I think it's absolutely totally unfair for them to be looking at it. Now, why would people vote for somebody that they knew were going to impact their Social Security? I can't explain that. But what I can say is that I'm sure people try not to be a single issue person, but this is more than a single issue. This is like your livelihood. If this is how you have invested in something that you would like to get a return on, and now someone is trying to think of ways that they cannot return it to you, it's absolutely, totally unfair, and it must be opposed at all stances.
Well, let's turn to something I know you're very supportive of and really want to see done, and that has to do with AIM Aid. That's Aid and Incentives to Municipalities program. You've been fighting for this. I noticed that you were recently with the acting Buffalo mayor, Chris Scanlon, pushing for a hotel bed tax. And this whole idea that aid to cities and towns is very important, especially for a city like Buffalo.
It absolutely is. If you think about it, and I know I've mentioned this on more than one occasion, but on last year's budget process is when I was really got motivated to try and help the five upstate cities, or including Yonkers, to get some sort of break when it comes to the ability to pay for services. As you know, it's the police, the fire, teachers, generally by state law, don't have to live in the communities that they work in. And when you have a poor city like Buffalo or Rochester or Syracuse coming up with resources to pay for these services that their constituents need, but according to state law, they can't mandate them to live anywhere. So what we have specifically in Buffalo is people who earn very decent salaries, and they should be paid decently, by the way. I would never want to take that from them. But they take those same dollars from the poor people of Buffalo and invest them in communities like Amherst, where they pay property taxes at. And so since the state is the one who requires this, then they should understand that it's incumbent upon them to try to help those communities that don't have the capacity to continue raising property taxes because the people don't have the capacity to be able to pay it, that they should do something to be helpful. Now, I will note that the governor has this year again put in an additional $5 million for those cities upstate that specifically will help them with unrestricted resources, however they want to use it. But I think it should be more. And I will not give up that fight until we have an opportunity to see that happen.
You're listening to the Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina, and we're speaking with Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Well, you are a member of the Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian Legislative Caucus, and you recently, back in February, released the 2025 Empower Black New York Agenda. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, not in specificity, because we released that sometime in around February during our caucus weekend, and honestly, the full details of it, I did not on a regular basis participate in. But what I do know is what Black people and brown people suffer from in Syracuse is the same thing they suffer from in the Bronx or Brooklyn or anywhere else in the state of New York. And so we do have to have some specific looks at how do you improve the quality of life for these people while it's not like they're just all waiting for you to take care of them. No, some of these people work. They work every day. They invest in the communities where they live. They should be getting something in return. And so I do think that, you know, there is a bit of a culture in America where people of color are not prioritized. They don't receive the same privilege as other people. And as soon as we get to eliminating that sort of behavior, the better off we'll all be.
Yeah, and this systemic racism is throughout the country in most of the basic systems that we have, like the criminal justice system, the education system. And when it comes to dollars and poor
system, you can go through all of them.
Yeah, you sure can. And you and I have talked about this. And the idea that you have a federal government now that looks askance at diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is just what we're talking about. And the idea that it's being removed from records, including the Smithsonian. I mean, are you worried about what's going to happen in the future if we continue to look the other way on things like systemic racism in our society, as well as this?
I won't say I'm worried. Yeah. Actually, four generations away from enslaved people. And if you can get through four generations away from slave people and become the majority leader, all things are still possible. And so, you know, I think we have to still keep working. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, collective people's thought process are the same, then they have to collectively work on that. And that's where we are right now. Most of America's industries have been built on the backs of Black people and brown people. And so until we get access to that same sort of level of economics, then I think we just have to keep pushing for it. I would be remiss if I decided that, you know, I can't do this anymore. It's intolerable. I can't do it. But while I'm standing on the shoulders of people who made it through, not just the middle passage, but through slavery and through Jim Crow and through civil rights. I mean, the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Civil Rights Act of 65, those were fought for by Black people, but they're enjoyed by everybody. And it should be that way. And so I think, you know, we just have to keep staying on target, staying on issue, staying focused on what we need to do to be a more inclusive society in spite of what the federal government is saying right now. I actually sit on the Women's Commission to set up a Women's History Museum through the Smithsonian. And, you know, the thought that every woman's history can't be included in that because they want to deny people the fact that they are African American or the fact that they're Native American or the fact that they're Latino American is very discouraging to me, but I'm not willing to say that that's okay. And so since I'm not willing to say that's okay, I have to be willing to still fight for it. And I am.
Can you just tell us a little more about a new Smithsonian Museum for Women? What that would be? Where would it be?
It would be in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
It would be on the Mall, where there are many other Smithsonian museums. It is something that has been in the works for, I want to say, the last maybe 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
The first process was setting up a commission just to go out and study whether this is something that, you know, women want. And there were some amazing women who did that years ago. Carolyn, former Congresswoman Maloney, was the one who first introduced the bill for it. It's been approved to establish the museum, but what we have not gotten yet is an approval on this location. Once there is an approval on the location, then we will do much like other Smithsonian museums, including the African American Cultural Museum. You get half of the money from the federal government and the other half you have to raise. So we're going to be looking to, in the next 10 years or so, to raise $500 million to cover the cost of building that museum that honors women. You kind of might be surprised that as long as we've been around as a country, there is no history museum that honors women under the Smithsonian umbrella.
Well, thank you for your efforts. The question I have now has to do with mental health. It seems like with the issue of cell phones in school that there's going to be a ban for students, whether it's, you know, bell to bell or there's some sort of agreement to allow some use of it at break periods. I don't know how that's going to play out, but, you know, this is a major issue between the cell phone itself and the use of social media. We're seeing depression rates skyrocket. We're even seeing suicidation and all sorts of problems, not to mention just paying attention in school.
Yeah, it's a challenging issue, but I think we still have to keep discussing it. I think most children have had the access to some sort of computerized equipment in their hands since they were infants, almost. And I'm thinking of my 2-year-old great-granddaughter who already knows how to scroll things on the phone and how to push the button when she wants to FaceTime to go off. She's 2. And I don't necessarily think that it's always a negative to have access to a phone because you can actually do research on it. So I think we should be focusing more on how do we turn that phone into an arm of research to educate as opposed to something that is prohibited to have. I know that there are a ton of districts, particularly in the Western New York community, because I attended a roundtable discussion with the governor on this topic, who already have policies in place. And so sometimes I don't think it's always up to government to figure out how people do these things, but you should let them know that they should do something. What would you like to do as opposed to you have to do this?
Well, the thing that I've always wondered about when it comes to schools is the funding formula and that we've never gotten it right. And the idea that you mentioned property taxes before go to pay the school. But, you know, if you're in a poor neighborhood, there's not a big tax base. So we really haven't worked out the equity there, have we?
Not yet, but we're still working on it. You may notice a couple of years ago, I actually passed some legislation called the Community Schools Act, which, yep, you know, provide additional resources to schools that had a lot of children in them who come from lower incomes and needed more support. As a result of that, there are schools in Buffalo that hold Saturday academies where, you know, maybe there's a lawyer there that the family can talk to. You know, maybe there's a student interns from the dental school or the medical school that can help people understand how to get access to the proper health care. I've even seen some young people have the opportunity to ride a horse. You know, it may seem like it's not a learning activity, but it is a learning activity. And when you come from a community where you never get that experience, that adding that experience could add value to your education. So I think community schools are working. The only issue that I have with them right now is, you know, they've been like most other opportunities to get resources for your school district, they've in some ways been compromised. And some districts are getting access to them that really don't have the same population in it that, say, School 37 does in the great city of Buffalo.
Finally, we're running out of time, but Crystal Peoples-Stokes, I know you have been one of the first people on this issue, the legalization of cannabis. It's legal, both recreational, and we have medical cannabis as well. I've spoken recently to some medical cannabis doctors who are unhappy. I know you've heard from them as well. The idea here is that it's not being treated as medicine like it should be. So, for example, more choices on the recreational side, when if patients who have legitimate medical concerns, they should have more choices, that it's not taken seriously. And therefore, it's pushing everyone to the recreational side and shortchanging the folks who have medical conditions. And on top of that, that it costs less to test your product if you want it on the recreational menu than it does if you want it on the medical menu.
Well, there are a lot of complicated issues around this one. I will say that, you know, medical marijuana was in place before the adult use was passed. But when adult use was passed, it created an agency, the Office of Cannabis Management, that then took the medical piece of it from the health department. It took the agriculture piece of it, the hemp part, from the agriculture department, and it put it all into one department. But there has been so much focus on the adult use part of it and not enough focus on the other two pieces. I think, you know, that needs to change, and it needs to change with some urgency because it is a medical plant. It has medical capacity, not just for seniors, but, you know, perhaps for young people who were born with disabilities. And so I, for one, would like to see that there are not taxes charged on medical cannabis. You don't pay a tax when you get a prescription for diabetes or any other prescription. Yeah. So you should not be paying one on medical cannabis. I support that. I will still keep working to try to make that a reality. And I'm looking forward to the day when not just this current administration, but any administration in the future really takes this product, this plant, seriously for what its potential could mean to not just our society, but to the ability to have revenue to do the sort of things that you need to do in your community. I am not confident, honestly, in the administration of how things are going now with the Office of Candidates Management, but I think that there is potential. And since I know that there is potential being the lead sponsor on the legislation, I'm going to continue to keep my eyes on the prize and push towards the full intent of MARTA.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. There's always so much more I could talk with you about. Crystal Peoples Stokes.
We'll have to pick another time. I really did want to, you know, have an opportunity to discuss the governor's position on mental health issues.
Go ahead.
Some people really do need help. And whether they know they need help or not is not the issue. The issue is that they need it. And for us to assume that we can't figure out a way to get them support that they need, either voluntarily or involuntarily, is almost inhumane. And, you know, I think it's a health issue for the people who need us. And I think we should be trying to figure out how do we get to that. I don't think we're there with this budget process yet, but I believe that we can get there. And I quite frankly think we have to. The health of these people who are citizens who live in this country, who live in this state, they need us working in their behalf as well. And I would like to do that.
And I'll have to be the last word. She is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples Stokes. We'll get you back, of course, to talk more about these important issues. Good luck with the budget.
And thank you, David.
Thank you so much for joining us again.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.